Hello, my name is Alex Wiseman. I'm a transplant nephrologist at University of Colorado, and I'm performing a transplant in 10 lecture for you for the AST. Today's lecture is going to be discussing complications of transplantation immunosuppression. There's going to be three points that we primarily focus upon. One is the key complications that we see with immunosuppression. The second is strategies to affect those immunosuppression complications. And then finally, we'll talk a little bit about the consequences of those strategies that we might employ. So to start off, let's just simply look at the top couple things that can happen with immunosuppression. So from an infectious disease standpoint, a metabolic component, and from a malignancy component, these are all areas that we have to wrestle with in terms of immunosuppression and complications. So picking the top two, this is my choice, so you have to listen to it. But number one in my vote would be CMV disease. And so CMV disease definitely is something that we see routinely post-transplant. With prophylaxis, we get much better control, but it's still probably one of our major immunosuppression-related infections. Number two, as a transplant nephrologist, I would say that BK virus is our number two leading cause of infectious disease-related complications. And for those non-nephrologists in the audience, I will add a third just for grins, which would be EBV. So these are the top two to three infection-related complications. For metabolic complications of immunosuppression, we'll pick the top two. So number one on the list is post-transplant diabetes. And number two is elevated cholesterol. So these, again, are not necessarily related to over-immunosuppression, but they're probably more related to medication side effect profiles, whereas over-immunosuppression is clearly a component of the infectious disease complications. Finally, in malignancy causes, number one would be skin cancer. And number two, related to EBV infection, is post-transplant lymphoproliferative disease, PTLD. Okay, so these are the things that we have to wrestle with the most. Now what we have to do is actually figure out, we've given immunosuppression, we've caused these side effects, or we've caused these over-immunosuppression-related effects. Can we do something about it? So we really have three strategies in order to try to minimize these effects. And I would just say one, two, and three, just in general, are decreasing immunosuppression, changing the drug of immunosuppression, and then finally, eliminating. So we have decrease, change, and eliminate. And what I would say to you is this becomes an art rather than a science. If you see somebody who's dogmatic about one approach versus another, they are either very opinionated or very delusional about whether or not they truly have the right answer for this. So there's many ways to skin a cat when it comes to decreasing immunosuppression or making changes. What I would say in general is that assuming that we're treating patients with a calcineurin inhibitor and a proliferative agent, plus or minus prednisone, what we'll be talking about is a decrease of maybe 25 to 33% in overall immunosuppression for milder forms of these diseases, and perhaps 50 to 75% reduction when we're talking about very severe or life-threatening forms of disease. Most practitioners will reduce the antiproliferative agent rather than the calcineurin inhibitor for reasons that I'll talk about later in terms of consequences. Regarding change, so changing immunosuppression may affect these side effects as well. So one could imagine switching one calcineurin inhibitor for another, antiproliferative agent for another. The other alternative is to actually switch an agent, a calcineurin inhibitor, for a non-calcineurin inhibitor, such as an mTOR inhibitor or belatacept. And then finally, for probably more severe forms of these diseases, we may actually want to eliminate immunosuppression altogether. And that elimination may be first and most easily accomplished by eliminating the antiproliferative agent. There's a lot of questions about whether or not elimination of calcineurin inhibitors is truly beneficial, despite the fact that it may drive many of these side effects. So let's now focus these general approaches to our disease processes here. So when we're talking about CMV, BK virus, I'd say of these strategies, A decrease is often employed. Some centers have employed a change, going from tacrolimus to cyclosporin, for example, going from mycophenolate preparation to an mTOR preparation. And then the third option, obviously, is discontinuation altogether. All three of these have been reported in the cases of infections. And again, one size does not fit all. We have to kind of balance the good and the bad of immunosuppression. And often, again, this becomes an art of immunosuppression reduction. Regarding metabolic effects, we probably have a little bit more data to support one change versus another. But again, you have to balance a change in immunosuppression versus the risks of rejection. So for post-transplant diabetes, for milder forms of disease, you can consider switching from, say, a tacrolimus-based regimen to a cyclosporin-based regimen. You can consider, if the patient's on an mTOR, switching to an MPA-based regimen. So these are probably going to get you into a better condition as far as post-transplant diabetes is concerned. As far as hypercholesterolemia is concerned, again, the two major players here are going to be mTOR and cyclosporin. So again, if you're wrestling with hypertriglyceridemia or hyperlipidemia that is unresponsive to therapy and it is safe from an immunosuppression standpoint to switch, then a change in strategy is probably the most effective strategy for the metabolic complications. And then finally, for malignancy, there's a lot of data that is circulating regarding immunosuppression dose reduction, specifically switching from a calcineurin inhibitor to an mTOR inhibitor or other agent. So this is essentially the strategy of changing or decreasing. So while there's not one size that fits all for infection disease-related complications, there is some information about mTOR inhibitor utilization in malignancy. It may prevent more skin cancers from forming in individuals that have a predisposition to skin cancers. It may prevent the new onset of skin cancers or other malignancies if used from the very beginning of transplant. Again, the consequences are now what we really have to address if we're talking about changing immunosuppression. So what are the consequences of all of these effects? Unfortunately, the big effect here is it increases alloimmunity. And when we say increasing alloimmunity, every change we make has a counterpoint, which is a risk in increasing acute rejection, decreasing graft survival. So there are some very interesting data when we look at effects that we make when we change immunosuppression. For example, in BK virus, there's a recent paper in JASN in 2015 from Sawiski et al. That basically describes the fact that if you decrease immunosuppression, you lead to an increase in donor-specific antibody formation by 2 to 3-fold. So there's a risk. Post-transplant lymphoproliferative disease. This is a very interesting scenario where reductions in immunosuppression is clearly very critical for a life-threatening disease. However, if you eliminate calcineurin inhibitors, there's been one study of 101 patients by Sarah et al. In Kidney International in 2014 that actually describes the fact that in the absence of calcineurin inhibitors, you increase rejection, you increase graft loss, and it increased DSA. Now, this is irrespective of how the cancer was treated, irrespective of responsiveness to therapy, and independently was associated with graft loss. So the common paradigms of decreasing or eliminating calcineurin inhibitors were actually questioned, at least in this retrospective study. And then finally, with calcineurin inhibitors, there's this tendency, of course, to try to eliminate perhaps the most tumorigenic component of our immunosuppression and maybe switch to other immunosuppression regimens. So switching to mTOR inhibitors or switching to belatacept in a stable, otherwise stable patient leads to acute rejection rates that are probably in the single digits, but you still have an acute rejection rate that is present. So these are all things that need to be taken under consideration when making changes. So what is the end point of all of this? Well, essentially, our goals in the future are really to figure out immune monitoring strategies And once we actually define how, what in a period of risk, when patients have eliminated their infection risk or have had their malignancies adequately treated, is there ever a time where we need to escalate immunosuppression back up? So is there a time frame, 3 to 6 months of stability to increase immunosuppression? These are areas of research and areas that I hope Transplant in 10 will be able to address for you in the future, is immune monitoring tools to not only identify patients at risk, so we don't have to reduce immunosuppression reactively, and we also may be able to predict these outcomes and have immune monitoring help us define when exactly we can safely increase immunosuppression, so we can avoid issues such as donor-specific antibody formation, acute rejection, and graft loss. So hopefully this has been a useful 10 minutes of your transplant day. Again, we focused upon the complications of immunosuppression, and I hope that you have an opportunity to look at the AST website for other educational opportunities. Thank you.